Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Bett is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Pat.
Hey, what's new at the Prairie Winds Prairie Farm today?
Well, there's a couple of birds, but the common yellow throat is one in particular that's showing up. A little warbler.
The witchety, witchety, witchety.
Yeah. Right.
So a warbler, that's a neotropical migrant. So
neotropical migrant, yes. Little insect eaters, occasional seed, but they're here.
They are back, and Iowa bird community is benefiting from the common yellow throats. And there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, this 20th day of May 2022 and the 86th. Day of the war in Ukraine.
Well, today will be cooler than it's been, with a high of 68, and even cooler Saturday with a forecast high of 52 degrees. Currently, it's 55 degrees, and the KHOI weather rock is wet. Cooler conditions will prevail with the start of the week, with highs in the mid-60s and rain in the forecast next Wednesday. And once again, there are morels in the forecast. So let's welcome Dennis Hart with a summary of the news last week from local newspapers.
Home sales soar in Ames. That shortage of baby formula in Iowa and across the nation. And the court decision about school mask mandates in Iowa. All part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start where we usually do, with last Friday's paper, which reported that supply is still not keeping up with demand when it comes to home buying in Ames, and the end of the current seller's market is nowhere in sight. The number of homes on the market in Ames from 2020 to 2021 decreased by more than 100, but housing sales still soared to their highest level in 4 years in a market where houses sell almost as soon as they're listed. The average home price in Ames rose to $303,000, a hike of nearly 15%. Realtors say 25 to 39-year-old people are entering their prime home buying years, and there's not a lot of options for those buyers. In Ames last year, 608 homes were sold, the most in 4 years. The number of days homes were on the market dropped from 70 in 2020 to just 37 last year. Buyers are often offering more than the list price and waiving such things as inspections in order to compete. 90 new homes were built in Ames last year. And the Trib reported that federal government officials were trying to solve the problem of widespread shortages of baby formula. Those shortages were being caused by a combination of recalls, supply chain issues, and inflation. Empty store shelves are being reported all around the nation. Iowa is one of 6 states with baby formula supply shortages higher than 50%, and Des Moines has the fourth highest out-of-supply rate in the country. Later, it was reported that one of the major baby formula makers had reached an agreement to reopen its manufacturing plant. Saturday's Trib reported that an Iowa State University graduate student had sued the university, 2 supervisors, and a co-worker for sexual harassment and gender-based retaliation. Chelsea Ayanarella Cervantes, a graduate student in the College of Veterinary Medicine, alleges that Votek Gabriel, a visiting scholar and research assistant from the Czech Republic, made a series of sexually inappropriate comments to her and about her loved ones. She also alleged he made unwanted physical contact. All of this allegedly took place after his arrival in the summer of 2019. Ayanarella Cervantes filed the lawsuit last month against the university, against Gabriel, and against 2 professors who were her immediate supervisors. A university spokesperson said ISU cannot discuss the specifics of pending legislation, but that the allegations have been investigated by the State Civil Rights Commission and administratively closed as being unsupported by the facts. In another story, the Trib reported that an ISU student who graduated last weekend had become the first female world's steak grilling champion. Marissa Alverson, who is from Kansas City, won that title in March of 2021, and she received a $10,000 prize. She not only became the first woman to win the Steak Cook-Off Association's championship, she was the youngest person ever to do so. She says she wants to use her prize money to set up an organization to help encourage children to get into cooking. And by the way, she says she likes her steaks medium rare, and she likes spices and seasonings as well. Sunday's paper reported that the biggest players in the U.S. meat industry had put forward baseless claims of beef and pork shortages early in the coronavirus pandemic to persuade the Trump White House to keep processing plants running. A special U.S. House of Representatives committee found that the meatpacking owners disregarded coronavirus risks that eventually killed at least 269 workers. The committee alleges that meatpacking CEOs led by the head of the Smithfield pork processing giant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, led the effort that resulted in watered-down guidance from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and set the stage for weak regulations on all meatpacking plants in the first months of the coronavirus pandemic. And the report alleges that Tyson Foods' legal team prepared a draft with input from other companies that became the basis for an executive order the Trump administration issued in April 2020 that kept the plants open and made it difficult for workers to stay home. The Trib also previewed something that was set to take place this past Monday, a celebration of life in Slater for Jessica Hyatt, who had shared her cancer journey with millions of people through her TikTok videos. The 34-year-old Ames woman died of colon cancer last month. She had shared the news about her entering hospice care in February in an emotional video on TikTok. She talked about her bucket list wish of tasting a New Orleans-style beignet, which is a type of pastry. That request resulted in Hy-Vee stores teaming up with the Los Angeles beignet truck, whose chef came to Ames and gave Hyatt beignets. And the Trib had front-page pictures of Iowa State University graduates celebrating after receiving their diplomas during Saturday's spring commencement ceremony at the Hilton Coliseum in Ames. Tuesday's paper reported on the tough time some Iowa residents are having when it comes to paying for food, which has climbed nearly 9.5% in price. Experts say food prices could continue going up into next year because of increased costs of growing, processing, and transporting fruits, vegetables, and meat. Demand is growing while the supply of some food items is tighter. Iowa livestock producers are paying about 50% more to raise cattle and hogs now than they did 2 years ago. Prices for the corn and soybeans used to feed cattle, hogs, and chickens are nearing record highs. And fertilizer costs, in some cases, have tripled. And there are often not enough workers at meatpacking plants to keep the output going. There was also a report on the Democratic primary race to choose a candidate to go up against Republican incumbent U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. The primary is June 7th. Former Iowa Congresswoman Abby Finkenauer, retired U.S. Navy Vice Admiral Mike Franken, and rural Dr. Glenn Hurst are the three Democrats running for the right to take on Grassley. And then there was the story of the new ATM in Ames that dispenses, not money, but chocolate chip cookies and other treats. Ames was set to get its first cookie ATM this week. ATM in this case stands for Automatic Treat Machine. It's located just outside the North Grand Mall near the TJ Maxx entrance. It's part of a business known as Cookies Etc. The selection offered by the machine includes single cookies, three packs, muffins, bars, cinnamon rolls, gourmet popcorn, and drinks. Wednesday's Trib reported on the gathering in Slater that took place Monday afternoon to celebrate the life of 34-year-old Jessica Hyatt, the Ames woman who had died last month from colon cancer. She had battled her illness for 3 years, documenting her experiences and sharing them on TikTok. Her mother, Sarah Spangler, told those at a park that Jessica had been brave and that, in her words, she fought hard and strong for a long time. One of Jessica's friends said that Jessica would, in her words, live on in all sorts of memories, all sorts of ways. She had an indomitable spirit. The Trib also reported that a federal judge had decided that Iowa school districts would no longer be allowed to issue sweeping mask mandates. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals decided to vacate a preliminary injunction on a new state law that banned schools from requiring masks. That means the state law that banned schools from requiring students or staff to wear face masks can go into effect. But the ruling says the ban does not apply to federal law, which means that parents of students with disabilities will have the right to ask schools to provide reasonable accommodations, which could include some kind of mask requirement to keep that student safe. There was also word that Lyme disease cases have increased in Iowa, and experts were warning residents to take precautions to avoid ticks. They thrive in wooded or grass areas, and people pick them up while they're gardening, hiking, or taking part in other outdoor activities. Ticks carry several diseases, including Lyme disease. If you're heading outdoors, the best way to avoid ticks is to wear long-sleeve shirts and long, light-colored pants tucked into socks or boots. Stay on trails when walking or hiking and avoid high grass. And use insect repellents. Ticks tend to prefer the back of the knee, armpit, scalp, groin, and the back of the neck. And the Trib had a story about the Boone Farmers Market, which will return for the season June 2nd in the 700 block of Story Street. The market will take place Thursdays from 3 to 6 p.m. through mid-October. It's been taking place more than 30 years, and this season, those who attend will be able to enjoy live music on the third Thursday of each month. More than 20 vendors are signed up for the markets. They can only sell items made or grown in Iowa. Yesterday's Trib reported that Governor Kim Reynolds had signed into law a bill requiring many gas stations to offer E15 gas. The law will not take effect for another 4 years. But by 2026, all gas stations in Iowa that have compatible equipment will have to make E15 available. It will have 15% ethanol blended with gasoline, and it's usually cheaper than regular gas. Almost all gas sold in the U.S. is E10. Critics say the mandate will hurt retailers around the state who don't already offer the blend by forcing them to add pumps and tanks. There will be exemptions for small-volume retailers. The governor signed the bill into law while she was standing on top of a trailer in a farm near Prairie City. She said, in her words, "I've never been prouder than I am today to be the governor of the number one ethanol and biodiesel producing state in the country." And the Trib reported that a potential inspector for two carbon capture pipelines proposed for Iowa presented its plan to the Story County Board of Supervisors this week. The Ames company Carbon Capture Solutions and the Navigator CO2 Ventures company plan to invest millions of dollars to capture carbon from ethanol plants, with pipelines running through dozens of Iowa counties, as well as through several other states. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, ready, willing, and able to take the weekend off now, as you probably are, and planning to pay a return visit to the same virtual seat on Monday morning at 7 on Local Talk, when I'll report on what's been making news around the state. I hope you'll be here as well. Between now and then, I hope we'll both have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend.
Daylight, I've been waiting for you all night. Can't get my mind right, and I'd hoped you'd bring some inside, because this world keeps spinning round. I don't know where I'll touch down. I'll touch down. Feel my car for those around are finally waking up to this brand new day, with all the headlines reading fear and rage, 'cause this world keeps spinning round. I don't know where we'll touch down. We'll touch down. The weight of the night, it's lifting. Just breathe and hold tight. It's gonna be all
right. Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, happy, healthy week. And the music interlude was Daylight by the A.B. Grouse Band, who will be appearing at a KHOY fundraising event at C.Y. Stevens next Thursday, May 26th at 7 p.m. with Matt Woods, too. You won't want to miss it. Go to khoyfm.org for tickets to this spring concert event and learn more about the A.B. Grouse Band on Monday when Mike Metz hosts a local talk with a featured interview with Jenny Grouse. Let's welcome Linda Merkin, incumbent candidate for Story County Supervisor. Welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Linda. So you are the incumbent. It's good to have you with us. Let's just start with why running initially was important to you and where we're at now.
Sure. The reason, I've served as a county supervisor since January of 2019. And the reason I wanted to run for county supervisor is I really believe local government is in a unique position. I've pretty much all my life watched government. When I was a kid, I was really interested in politics and read news magazines all the time. So I followed federal, state government. And when I was working in state governments. I followed the legislature. And everybody who's in, all elected officials do great, you know, I think are in a position to do a great job at various levels. But the thing that's unique about local government is that we don't go to Washington, D.C. to represent people. We don't go to Des Moines with 149 other legislators. I'll continue. I'm sorry. We live and we work in the communities where the people are that we represent. And we have those. We see people every day who elected us. And I think that's really important. And I think we can be much more responsive on issues that matter in Story County to people who live in Story County.
Absolutely. Appreciate those sentiments. What's your background to lead you to this? So you grew up with this, it sounds like. So that was quite an extensive background, how you got involved with politics. I hope you can hear me again.
I can hear you now. You did cut out.
Okay.
And I also got some feedback kind of in the midst of when I was talking, so I don't know how that played.
Yeah. We got most of it. Thank you. And
okay.
What would you like the voters to know about you that maybe we're still learning?
Well, I think people know. I say it a lot. I've lived in Story County, you know, all my life. Was interested in politics early. Never, ever thought that I would run for office, though. I just thought I would be talking to people who were representing me and working on issues. But I retired in 2010. And at that point, I decided I really had an opportunity to give back to the community in a way that I couldn't when I worked full time. So I threw myself into volunteer work. Worked with a lot of aid organizations for about 6 years. And then a couple things happened that kind of changed my focus. One of them was the Dakota Access Pipeline. Quite frankly, I got involved in Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition. And that was in 2016 was the time when, the Utilities Board permitted the Bakken pipeline and Dakota Access started building that. And that really was a disappointing thing to me because I felt like the utility board did not listen to the citizens of Iowa. And they also authorized eminent domain for private gain. And I saw how many people worked against that. I was just disheartened that they went ahead and did that. The other thing that happened then in 2016 was that Paul Chute passed away unexpectedly. And Paul was a county supervisor at the time. He was somebody I really admired. He had retired from law enforcement and run for county supervisor as a second career. And I'd retired from corrections. So we had a lot, you know, in common there. And it was I really admired Paul, the way he dealt with people, and I respected him. And he kind of, that his leaving us so suddenly, us losing him so suddenly, made me think about what was I going to do the rest of the time that I had to serve. And I decided to let people know I would be interested in running for county supervisor. It was a very short campaign because Paul had died after nomination papers were due, so the county party had to put somebody on the ballot, and it happened in August. So I let people know I was interested, and I was selected to be the nominee. So I had a short 4 months to campaign, and I had never run a campaign before. I had volunteered on some campaigns, but I'd never run one. So it was a real quick learning curve. I really enjoyed it. I lost narrowly in 2016, but I was approached by people and said, hey, you did run a really good campaign for those 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a 2 year, it was 2 years of the 4 year term that was filled in the election. Would you be willing to run again in 2018? And I thought about it for about 2 seconds and I said, yeah, I really would be. I think I've learned a lot. And one thing I learned about that was that a loss is not necessarily a defeat. It's only a defeat if you take it that way. You know, you can learn, you know, even though it's not the desired outcome that you want, you can learn a lot from a loss. And I thought, I've learned a lot in the last 4 months. I don't want to let that knowledge go. I want to build on that knowledge. So I started campaigning again in 2017, and I won in 2018. And there's something about knowledge, using knowledge, that I'd also like to say right now, and that's why I'm running again. I've been a supervisor for nearly 4 years. I had worked before in my previous job for a board that was made up of county supervisors from 22 counties. So I knew quite a few county supervisors, and I knew some of what they did. But when I actually was elected and started serving, I realized, even though I knew a lot about county government, there's a whole lot there, and it takes a while to learn it. So I feel like this first few years I've been there has been an investment in terms of getting knowledge, gaining knowledge, and I'm still learning every day. And in my mind, if I didn't run again and didn't try to serve again, I wouldn't be utilizing that knowledge and improving on that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm running for a second term. It's a great job. Somebody asked me after I won, somebody who had been a volunteer on my campaign asked me if I thought, did I think I would enjoy being a county supervisor as much as I enjoyed campaigning? And I said, I certainly will if it's just half as good as the campaigning was, half as great experience, it will be a success and I will be glad. And it is. It is a great job. And I'm very glad to be there. And I'm very grateful that I can do it.
Well, two things that
Sorry, a long answer.
Excuse me. Two things that I'm hearing. If you're following in the footsteps of Paul Toot and honoring his legacy, that's a wonderful link right in itself right there. And the other point of, sounds like you have a pretty strong environmental component to your platform then.
Well, yes. One of the issues I've been working on quite a bit is water quality. I serve on the watershed management authorities for the Iowa Creek, for the headwaters of the South and 4 Mile Creek. And I'm new on to 4 Mile, but the Iowa I've been on since I was elected, and the headwaters we just formed about a year ago, and we're working on an assessment right now of that. Yeah, water quality is something I'm really concerned about. It's something I probably get impatient about because I want to see it all happen right now, and I'm learning that it's a slow process because a watershed management authority, despite the name, really has no authority. It's got planning capabilities. And we really don't manage anything. We're just a group of entities that get together, jurisdictions within the watershed, who get together and try to plan for how we improve the water quality, how we implement best practices such as bioreactors, saturated buffers, cover crops, those kind of things. So a lot of it is educating and influencing. And as we know, that takes time. But mm-hmm. I think we're doing a lot of work on it. A lot of organizations are helping. I've just been amazed at the organizations that come out and say, yes, we're concerned about water quality. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my biggest things. I also serve on the Conservation Board, and I'm glad to see we're continuing to identify sensitive lands and protect sensitive lands. I think that's one of the big roles of the Conservation Board and the Conservation Department. And we've got some very dedicated board members and staff, and I'm just pleased mm-hmm. to be able to support them in their work.
Well, here's a hypothetical that we're offering to each candidate. If you were in charge of a $1 million grant to use for the community in any way you wanted, what would you do with it and why?
Well, I'm just going to talk about what we did.
Okay.
When we got the American Rescue Plan Act monies. Story County received $18.9 million directly from the federal government of the ARPA funds. And so we had that. You know, what do we do with $18.9 million? Well, we had some needs in the county that fit with the ARPA requirements, but we also thought, you know, we don't want to just, you know, county government can just spend all that money on county purposes, but there's a lot of other agencies and there's a lot of other people out there who've been impacted by the pandemic, and we need to reach out and see how we can help those agencies that are helping Story County residents and how we can help our communities. So we did that. We put out a grant process. And it was kind of easy in some ways because there were some definite criteria on how you could use ARPA funds. If we had this hypothetical $1 million, you know, we might have to say, you know, what are our criteria? And I think we look at what we've heard from the county, you know, from our communities, and what are the greatest needs, and maybe put out a selected, you know, an RFP or a request, you know, a grant request, and just say, you know, here are some things that we have some money. Here are some things we are interested in helping make better for Story County residents. Do you have any ideas? Do you have any concepts, suggestions, any programs that fit in here that need funding? And I would do that. I would also get as much input as I could, because we do have a lot of needs assessments. We've got the Story County Quality of Life Assessment, which is done every few years. We've got some assessments, but there are a lot of things that kind of get missed. So that's really the hardest thing sometimes, is saying, what is, you know, what's the greatest need? And I would not, even though I might have pet projects, things I care about deeply, I would not say, let's just do that. I said, let's get some more information from people and let's see what's out there and what we could do.
Sure. I'm sure there are special places where you have given this some thought. Care to share any of those with us? Any of those special places?
Well, I think the big challenge we're going to have in now and in the future is climate change. We're just getting started at the county level right now in doing an assessment, and we should have some results soon. That's something I would really like to see, is what we need to do. I'm a big proponent about, let's clean up our act first before we start talking to other people. And I think we all have places where we need to clean up our act there. So I think that would probably be something I'd be pretty high on my agenda, is what does Troy County government need to do to be more responsible in terms of combating climate change?
It sounds like you're creating those special places wherever you can, and particularly where you live.
Definitely. Thank you.
Well, can we, as you say, there we could talk for hours. Is there anything else that we could touch on that is matters to Linda Merkin as a sitting member of our Board of Supervisors?
You said, what's the most interesting thing you've learned while campaigning? And I kind of told you what I learned about myself, but about others. And I also learned this from David Martin, a former city council member. When he was campaigning for that, he talked about people care about their communities. They want to help make them better. We need to ask people. He said he got involved with a lot of things. I mean, he was here in Ames, but he got involved because he was asked. And I always remember that importance of asking people to get involved. Another thing you asked me about, what are my personal core values? And I thought about that one, too. And then I thought about where I got those values. And I got them from my parents. And these are simple. Mm-hmm. First, work hard. Second, think of others first. That was particularly my mother. And third, take care of the land. Those are
wonderful really parting thoughts and comments. And certainly a very important walk that you share with us here in Story County. Linda Merkin, thank you so much for being a guest with us here on Local Talk.
Thank you, Pat. It's my pleasure.
And it is 7:32 on your Friday. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. And I'm your host for the hour, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Susan Gwiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good to be here.
Good to have you with us. Do you have any announcements for the city?
Well, I sure do. So while we wait and see if we have any guests that join us, I can just go down some of the stuff that's coming up. Of course, always events for your calendar. We've talked about it before, but tomorrow is the big day. It's the Mayor and City Council's bike ride.
Yeah.
I sure wish we had a little bit different forecast. It looks a little bit brisk tomorrow morning. That's at 9 a.m. Saturday morning, we'll gather at City Hall in the West parking lot. Pat, you think you'll bring your bike?
You know, I'm supposed to be up northeast Iowa kayaking, so I think I'll be in my rain gear out there also, but it's okay. It's another spring rain, and the farmers have been pretty active for a number of days, so I hope it's going to work out okay for everybody. But I appreciate the rain, but yeah, it would have been nice if, well, maybe it'll hold off till the afternoon.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We're not making that call yet. So tomorrow at 9 a.m., we'll gather at the West parking lot at City Hall. And we got a great route planned. We talked about this earlier, but we're going to go south. And we're going to leave City Hall, head towards Brookside Park, and then follow the path along the river there at Stuart Smith. And we're going to actually be able to possibly see the Iowa Creek stream cleanup going on. Liz Calhoun has been on earlier talking about her stream cleanup that was postponed. That is also happening this Saturday. So as we bike, it's possible that we'll see the group that's volunteering to do the creek cleanup. And so we will bike south towards the Tedesco Learning Corridor. And when we get to the Tedesco Learning Corridor, we will stop for a little bit, and Mike Cox will give us a little bit of an overview of the Tedesco Learning Corridor, which, as you know, is a county park inside the city of Ames limits. And I have to tell you, I went on the pre-ride. We always do a pre-ride of this ride. And I got a chance to bike through the Tedesco Learning Corridor. And I had not really biked through it. I had kind of been on the outskirts. It is really lovely. It's a really nice park.
It really is a jewel. You know, that used to be the old railroad right away down through that area of Ames that has now been converted or repurposed or whatever. It's access to a lot of the agrarian areas associated with Iowa State University. So it's going to just become a major thoroughfare for people like yourself that enjoy these opportunities to see a little bit of nature in an urban setting. And yeah, kudos to Mike Cox and all of his staff there at the Story County Conservation Board for embracing this opportunity. And I think it's a positive influence, not only on the research park professionals, but for everybody in Ames to kind of connect with how we can move forward and not leave the environment behind, I guess, if you see where I'm going with that.
And it's just a lovely, the space itself is just to really relax and enjoy being in nature. And as we were biking through it the other day, you just get a sense that you're removed from some of the hustle and bustle of a typical city experience. It was really nice. There's a lot of really thoughtful space within that property where you can explore or learn. They repurpose boxcars. I didn't realize the connection with the railroad before, so that makes sense. They repurpose some boxcars. There's interpretive signage. There's some sculpture out there. We'll spend a few minutes with Mike Cox learning a little bit more about that area, and then we will turn and head north, going through some new trail areas, eventually hooking on to the South Grand Extension. So we'll bike across that new area. Boy, that is really nice. It's wide. It's protected from the car lanes. And as you're heading back north towards City Hall, we'll swing over to the South 5th Street wetlands. And Tracy Peterson, our municipal engineer, will just also give a very brief update on the wetlands, their purpose, and some of the flood mitigation that's going on in that area that I think took people a little bit by surprise, kind of understanding the big plan. It really is starting to green up along the waterway there, and information about all the native plantings that are going in there, and really the whole thought process behind using plants and the land to sort of filter water before it goes back into the waterways. So I find that to be, that'll be really interesting as well. And then we just head up north a couple of blocks and we're back to City Hall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a great opportunity.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, it's 7.5 miles, so not a bad trip. Most people do bike to City Hall, so they might have a little ways to go after that. We do have some assistance from the Ames Police Department, so we get some assistance crossing some of those busier streets. When we did the pre-ride, it was during prime traffic time, and yeah, it gets a little it gets a little congested. It just reminded me, as somebody who's a bicyclist and a motorist, when you're in your vehicle, you really have a responsibility to pay more attention to people using alternate modes of transportation. And I think now that the weather gets warmer, it's really important to remember that people are going to be all around you on bicycles, walking, scooters. You know, there's people with strollers. You just really need to be more aware of a motorist, all the people around you. And so that came very clear to me when we were biking right around 4 p.m. the other day, that motorists tend to be very focused on getting where they're trying to go, and they don't always take into account the whole picture around them. So this will be easier on the bike ride. It's a Saturday morning, and we will have some police help as we cross some of those busy intersections.
And the bike lanes in the designated green, when I was in Arizona, I could see communities were obviously, I think they had been implementing those green zones for the bikes. That's kind of new now to Ames. But in seeing it in other states, I see a movement here because of the issue of safety. I mean, we want to encourage people to be out on their bike, but they got to be safe.
Yeah, that comes really clear when you're out there biking. Again, we had Bike to Work Week, the breakfast this Monday of this week. And we heard from a lot of bicyclists that talked about some of their concerns. Obviously, as we get into the climate action plan and we look at looking at non-motorized ways to get around the community, we have to make biking and walking a more realistic alternative for people. We can't ask them to leave their cars at home but not offer what they perceive as a safe way to get around. We know we have a really robust bus system. Mm-hmm. We know that SciRide, for example, will be getting all electric buses this summer. Just a couple. I think we're going to start with two and then maybe end up with five. So that's pretty exciting. That's a way that we're starting to convert the fleet. But public transportation still is strong here in Ames. We have a much stronger bus system than communities of this size are usually able to support. And that's, of course, because of the large university community that we have. But again, as we look at our climate action plan, if we're asking people to use alternate forms of transportation, mm-hmm. even if it's just once a week, you have to feel like there's a safe alternative. So yeah. Looking at those other ways around the community are really important. I mean, Pat, mm-hmm. you're exactly right. People need to feel safe. Mm-hmm. So we continue to explore those. Mm-hmm. We have looked with our complete streets plan, we look at a standard. And if you're driving on South Grand, I think that's a great example of a separated bike path that is very wide and allows you to feel like you can safely use it and bike along a major street, but still feel like, well, this feels good. This is safe. And it's really aesthetically pleasing. You're biking through a golf course. It's a lot to look at. It's attractive. And so those are kind of some of the new standards that we're offering in this kind of alternative transportation. I just mm-hmm. did have a couple other items I wanted to mention go into the summer. I think we talked about this briefly. We are going to bring back the Ames Municipal Band concerts. We had them back last year, after the worst of the pandemic. Same kind of situation. They're a little bit different format this year. So those will start. They're always on Thursday nights through June and July, but they're not the week of the 4th of July. Those start at 8 p.m. and there is no warm-up band this summer. So a little bit later in the evening, but it'll have cooled down by then. And one of the reasons that the Ames Municipal Band likes to play later in the evening is because they play at Banshell Park and they put in all new lighting and they have this fun LED lighting show where the lights turn colors. Yeah. And in the summer, you know, it doesn't really get dark till after 8. So they really have to wait until the sun sets in order to really have that full experience mm-hmm. of playing music under the lights. So those municipal band concerts will be at 8 p.m. on Thursday, starting Thursday, June 2nd. And Thursday, June 2nd is a special one. That is Ames City Council Night at the Band Shell. Mm-hmm. And that one will feature Simon Estes. We will be going, getting there early. So that first one will actually include a sustainability tabling event at 7 p.m. where you can learn about some of our conservation rebates, program services, and get information from city staff. Pick up some ice-cold Ames water, and we'll be giving out ice cream.
Yeah, and ice cream. Simon Estes and ice cream with the light show at the band show. As soon as the lights started appearing last winter, I marvel at the different colors. Mm-hmm. I think I've got a picture of each of the different colors because they're just so wonderful. Is there one other thing?
It really is pretty.
It is. It's just charming.
I think I'll leave it at that for today. We've kind of gone over a lot of information. Again, The bike ride tomorrow at 9 a.m. Please join us. It might be a little brisk, but unless there is really severe weather, we'll still go.
Yeah.
I've learned that bicyclists are pretty diehard, and they will show up, and they want to ride, so we'll do it.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do for the city of Ames, Susan Guiazda, and we do trust you to be the visionary that you are. So thank you so much.
Well, you have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Only one time, but two times to be named the Iowa Blues Challenge winners, and we are very proud. Thank you for that distinction.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I think we'll do one of the songs that we first did when we went to the International Blues Challenge, because sometimes we like to take it back just a little bit. Are you okay with that? All right. Let's do this. Well, the night is so cold, baby, but I'm 103. Just thinking of you, boy, had its effect on me. You're out all the time, I'm burning up, come and get this love.
More of the A.B. Grouse Band that's going to be appearing at C.Y. Stevens next Thursday night. You want to go to khoifm.org for ticket information. Mike Metz, there's an opportunity to live stream. You can gather with your neighbors for for nominal fee.
Yeah,
and
you're a little...
What a service. What a great way to not only contribute to KHOI, but hear some great music with your friends.
With your friends. If you're still a little reluctant to join the crowd there, what a way to still interact and help KHOI raise some funds. This is our kickoff.
Well, and this band, I don't want to overlook mentioning Matt Woods also, that's going to be appearing. Now, here's a local blues guy that I had the good fortune of doing an interview with yesterday, and we'll have that on maybe Monday or Tuesday.
I believe Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll look forward to hearing more from Matt Woods. But, I mean, that guy, young guy, but following in the footsteps of some legendary blues artists. He brought up Vicky and Joe Price. And have long roots with Joe Price fame of the old Mother Blues band back in the 70s. And so anyway, part of that interview, we'll talk about Vicky and Joe and other people that have influenced Matt Woods. But this A.V. Grouse band, I think they're becoming my favorite new band to learn more about. Out of the Quad Cities, so it's another Iowa product, but they are really looking forward to playing it. C.Y. Stevens next Thursday at 7. But as you might have heard in her intro there, have been recipients of the Iowa Blues Challenge, winning that award twice and most recently 2020.
What a great honor, right?
Well, yeah, I mean...
And homegrown.
homegrown and coming to Ames, Iowa to play at C.Y. Stevens, I guess our Carnegie Hall of the Midwest. So look forward to learning more about A.V. Grouse Band next Monday and Tuesday leading up to the concert on Thursday. But
and how can folks get those tickets, Pat?
Go to the
KHOIFM.org for information, and you can get some tickets right through us. That'll help start our fundraising kickoff for the spring.
And let's welcome Amber Wiggert with the ISU Extension. Hi, Amber. Hi, Amber. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you with us once again.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're plenty busy with a lot of summertime activities coming up.
Yes, we are. We are rocking and rolling already, and we're excited to kick off some June programming coming up very shortly. We have adult programming and youth programming. I'm going to highlight some adult programming here to start with. June 1st, we have a Preserve the Taste of Summer, some virtual series starting.
Preserve the Taste of Summer?
And what it is, it's on Sunday night. And it's, Preserve the Taste of Summer. So the first one session is on jam making. So you're going to learn how to make your jams and jellies, how to maybe work on the water bath canning. It's a one-hour course. So then June 8th, kind of following along those same lines, we're going to talk about the garden produce and how you can preserve your garden produce, like different methods to can, maybe how to freeze it or dry the fruit safely at home. So we're getting into that season and gardening, and you know, we want to save those produce and preserve them so we can eat them all year round.
Exactly.
And let's see. Yes. And
so
then
a little sunshine.
One thing I do want to mention with canning is that if you have a canner at home and you want to get it tested, make sure you know it's working properly. We do canner testing here at our office in Ames. You're welcome to give us a call at 515-337-1601. We can set up an appointment for you, and you can get that canner tested to make sure that your pressure is all working correctly so that you're ready to go.
I will, because I've got my mom's, and I've had it a number of years, so it's probably a good idea to get it tested.
Yes, we want to make sure that we preserve it safely as well. So
exactly.
Yeah, and then June 1st, I want to also tell you about our floral arranging series. So this is kind of like a hybrid session. We're going to invite you to come to our office in person, And we're going to live stream with Assistant Professor Dan Braybeck. And we're going to do a hands-on workshop and kind of make our own floral arrangements. So we have just a couple of spots left for that on June 1st at 6 to 7 o'clock in the evening. And we invite you to register for that as well.
Sounds like another good workshop.
Yeah, it's really exciting. The summer ones are going to be fun. In that spirit, we also on June 16th have another garden landscape hybrid live stream. It's called Monarch Habitat in the Home. And we're going to invite Dr. Donald Lewis. He's an extension and outreach entomologist. He's going to talk about the monarch butterflies, the last two decades they've kind of led to increased interest in Iowans, what we can do to help. What have you done for pollinators? What can you do for the pollinators? It's just all about monarchs on June 16th. That's 6 to 7 o'clock at our office here as well.
Okay. And Donald Lewis, a noted authority, absolutely. Best insect guy.
Yes, he's a great guy. We love to have him.
Best insect guy there is. We've got a couple more minutes.
That's just a little tidbit of adult programming. Now, youth programming, I'll talk a highlight about the first few in June, because we have over 35 programs planned for our youth here in June, and we just have something for everybody. So the first one coming up on June 8th is our Garden Time Day Camp. So we have the gardening for the adults, and now we're going to have some gardening for youth. So that's for kindergarten through third graders. They're going to come and learn about parts of the plant, where the food comes from, what you need to grow your plants. It'll be a fun day with all sorts of activities on plants.
Great.
Yes. And then for the youngsters, the 3 to 5 year old preschoolers, Tuesdays in June, we invite them to come out with their adults, and we're going to be exploring nature in our outdoor program. So this program is called Growing Up Wild. It's Tuesdays, June 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th from 1 to 1:45 in the afternoon. And you can come for one program, you can come all four Tuesdays. There's a new activity each week, so we can't wait to see those young ones in our office as well to explore nature with us.
And Amber, the best place to learn more about your programming is at your website?
Yes, definitely. I invite you to visit our website. It's extension.iastate.edu/story. You can check us out on our Facebook page, or you're welcome to give us a phone call at 515-337-1601.
It's a lot to look forward to, ISU Extension being the voice of all the research and all the good things that Iowa State University can generate, and then you put it out to the communities, and what a vital role that you have always played with ISU Extension here in Story County.
Yes, most definitely. Thank you.
Do you have anything else?
No, I think we have plenty of programs, but I can't get through them all the day. So just invite you to
check out the website.
Give us a call or come visit us, and we're happy to share those with you.
Okay, thank you, Amber Wingert with ISU Extension. Thank you for being on Local Talk.
Thank you.
Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOY Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have interest in joining the Local Talk team, the welcome mat is out. Come join the Local Talk team at our streaming live website at khoifm.org or call 515-292-2878. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Week in the News. And thanks to our guest, Story County Supervisor Linda Merkin. Thank you, Susan Guiasta. And thank you, Amber Wiggert with ISU Extension. Thank you, co-host Mike Metz. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were the Avery Growls Band. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now!, followed by Adagio at 9 a.m. Then KHOI War in Ukraine at noon with Svetlana Zerbacek. And hoping you have a good weekend, enjoying the birds in your backyard and at your feeders. Remember, you the listener are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
To look for